Welcome back. Welcome back.
Yes, y'all. You are so fucking funny.
Okay,
and it's always hilarious when we start an episode with me saying you are so fucking funny because nobody knows what's funny about it. But y'all, welcome back to Afro Movie Review, the podcast. Yes, this is the voice you're hearing is Mo, she, her pronouns, Afro Movie Reviewer, the Chocolate Chip Podcaster.
And I am Keeks, they, them pronouns, Afro Movie Reviewer, your favorite trans podcaster. Welcome back, you guys.
Yes, yes, y'all. This is season 7, episode 81. We are in the Women Directed It season.
Yes.
Let's hop into the history reel for this movie, which is A Wrinkle in Time, 2018, which makes the year 2018. Rock, paper, scissors.
Okay, let's do this. Rock. Paper, scissors, shoot! Damn you! I thought you were gonna do it. Scissors.
I knew in my mind to change it up. I said throw rock. You don't know how my mind could not lead the chant because it was rock, rock, was rock, so rock, 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 rock.
I was she's gonna go scissors. Let me throw paper because I've been going a lot.
You're a winner. Go ahead.
I think I have like two women related and one non-women related. So
okay, same.
We're going to go with the first one. January 15th, U.S. Olympic gold medal winning gymnast Simone Biles says she is one of more than 130 women sexually abused by former team doctor Larry Nassar. Mm-hmm. Now, we all know who Simone Biles is. Like, she's like the greatest of all time of gymnastics. But Lawrence Gerard Nassar was the team doctor of the U.S. women's national gymnastics team for 18 years, where he has sexually assaulted at least 256 young women and girls. He was sentenced to 60 years in federal prison after pleading guilty to possessions of child sexual assault material, because children can't consent to pornography, so it's called CSAM, and tampering evidence, an additional 40 to 175 years in Michigan State Prison for 7 counts of sexual assault in Ingham County, and an additional 40 to 125 years for 3 counts of sexual assault in Eaton County.
Under the
they are consecutive without parole. And I chose that one because recently we had the footage come out of Diddy abusing Cassie. And there was a paraphrase of a tweet, but somebody was like, abuse is a community problem because abusive and dangerous people always have a community that enables and holds them down.
Come on.
They complained against them since 1997, some stating that it happened since 1994, and the U.S. Gymnastics did not take action until 2015. So 21 years. And not
that
only
was a decision.
Did they have the U.S. Gymnastics behind them, they had their trainers and their training center as a community, so...
Mm-hmm.
Just believe Black women and girls.
One. And Simone Biles is back after taking her mental break hiatus, and
still the greatest of all time,
and still the GOAT. So
I love her
shout
so
out to
much.
Her. I think she just won like over the weekend. She just won another gold medal.
How you win 9 consecutive times?
Wow.
The same title.
Come on now, shoot them up.
She's amazing.
She is. Okay, well, I have 2 women-based fact and 1 non, so I will start with February 11th. MoMA opens a major solo exhibition for Brazilian artist Tarsila do Amaral in New York. She was alive from September 1st, 1886 until January 17th, 1973. A Brazilian painter, draftswoman, and translator. She is considered one of the leading Latin American modern artist, and was regarded as like the best achieved Brazilian artist for her work in nationalistic expression and modern style. So she was born to a wealthy family. They were landowners who grew coffee, but they worked their land, right? And this, she was also born during a time, it was 2 years before the end of slavery in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And this, she's a fair-skinned Brazilian woman. But she was born during a time where the higher echelon was not encouraged to educate their girls, and she had the support of her family to be educated. So she chose to be in fields that at this time were male dominated. She
Good
was Yeah, she trained under multiple male artists and was able to surpass them.
Yes.
So awesome, right? So her exhibition at the MoMA was called Tarsila do Amaral, Inventing Modern Art in Brazil, and that was at MoMA. And that was 2018, but it was also presented at the Art Institute of Chicago as a solo in 2017 under the same name. So
that's nice. My first fact. I love that. So my second fact will be the January 2nd, the World Health Organization reveals it will classify gaming addiction as mental health, as a mental health condition in its next classification of diseases. I had to go to Imani, Barbara, and Crutches and Spice. Shout out to them because they helped inform my disability praxis. But the last line of the ADA's definition of disability includes individuals who do not have a disability but are regarded as having a disability. And one of the things that Imani Barbara likes to say is that, well, two things. Every form of marginalization leads to disability. And once you are declared mentally ill, you automatically become an unreliable narrator of your life. So keeping that in mind, who decides if you have a disability or not? How would they benefit from labeling video games as a disability? Because addiction is a disability. And what happens to addicts in this country? Like, how are they treated and how are they supported? So just wanted to throw that out there. It also shows like the flexibility of like, was classified as mental illness. And right now we're having a lot of people comment on the genocide and like, they're like, oh, if you support this, you're mentally ill. Like, no, they're just evil. Like you can just, you don't have to classify it as mentally ill because not only does that perpetuate that mentally ill people are violent and they have no agency, because you guys do this when, you know, people shoot up schools to be like, oh, they're mentally ill. Like, no, they know exactly what they're doing. So I think it's important to point out not only, who benefits from these classifications, but like also what these classifications could mean for like the future and stuff like that. And this was 2018. So,
yeah. And Supernova Mama said something really interesting is that if you make it to old age, all of us become disabled. So watch how you treat them.
When I tell you, I took a geriatric psychology class, and that was like the takeaway from that class is that you will become disabled. It's a question of when,
okay? If you're given that time, right? So watch out. Right. My second fact is short but sweet. February 7th, it was figured out by a DNA study published in the journal called Nature, that all citrus fruits can be traced back to the southeast foothills of the Himalayas.
Ooh.
I love citrus fruits. I love
that so much, right?
Oranges and limes, lemons. Oh my God. I have a friend who's like into food. Oh, I love grapefruit. But like, I have a friend who was into lemons, and he was able to give me a lemon that dates back like 300 years. And the outside of it smelled like magnolia flowers, and the inside of it was the sweetest juice I had ever tried. Cannot remember the name, but somebody found some seeds when they were in trade with some other people who made lemon trading or like citrus seed trading have their thing, and they grew them.
My God.
He was able to get a lemon. Oh my God. Thank you to the southeast foothills of the Himalayas, because that is wonderful. I love citrus fruits.
I love them so much. Okay, my last fact, and I saved it for last because I liked it. June 6th, convicted drug trafficker Alice Johnson granted clemency by U.S. President Donald Trump after Kim Kardashian highlights the case. So I support women's rights, and I also support women's wrongs. Alice Johnson is an American criminal justice reform advocate and a former federal prisoner. She was convicted in 1996 for her involvement in a Memphis cocaine trafficking organization and sentenced to life. So her possessions was intent to distribute, which if you got possession, they put on an intent to distribute, like automatically. It doesn't matter if you actually were. So intent to distribute, money laundering and structuring, which is like breaking down large cash transactions to smaller amounts, so it doesn't trigger like a bank's financial institutions reporting requirements. But she got into it because she lost her job at FedEx. She worked at FedEx for 10 years and lost her job because of a gambling addiction. And this was after a divorce and the loss of her youngest son in a motorcycle accident. And then after that, she had to file for bankruptcy in 1991, and her house were foreclosed on. You goddamn right I'm getting into some shit. Like, I'm sorry.
I'm not going to be broke for long. Watch this.
Right. And my thing is, if you listen long enough, you know how I feel about drugs and how they shouldn't be criminalized, especially if you can't fix the material conditions that cause the drug use. And instead of, like, helping her, because she went through a lot, they just jailed her. And it's like, how much time did the U.S. government get for the crack epidemic? Like, Mattress Firm is money laundering, and we don't say nothing about them.
You know how I feel about that.
And J.P. and Morgan and Chase had a boatload of cocaine at the beginning of the penny. What happened to that? So I'm glad she's out. I'm glad she's doing her thing. I hope she is healed from all of that trauma, because, like, I'll be damned.
For real.
So that's my last fact.
Okay. My last fact is that on today, this day in 1906, June 3rd, Josephine Baker, the first Black superstar, is born.
Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah. So Josephine Baker, American born, but French dancer, singer, and actress. And we know why they put the French on
it. The French love Black Americans, and Black Americans love the French.
But the reason that they have that connection is because of Josephine Baker. Josephine Baker is also the first Black woman to star in a major motion picture, the 1927 silent film Siren of the Tropics. It was directed by Mario Nalpes and Henri Ativant. Because she went to France because she could not make it out here in a way that she knew she was being stifled in, but she was the oppression and the racism and the discrimination was stifling her ability to really succeed and thrive in her artistic creation, right? So going to Paris specifically was where she was able to do everything. She was very active in the civil rights movement from Paris. And she began to adopt a bunch of children instead of having her own. And she called them the Rainbow Tribe. She adopted 2 daughters and 10 sons.
A mother.
April 8th, 1975, she starred in a retrospective review at the Bobino in Paris. And it was called Josephine à Bobino 1975. It was celebrating 50 years in show business for her. And she had a glowing response. I mean, everybody just raved about her. She was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But they found her 4 days later at her house, and she was in a coma. She had a cerebral hemorrhage.
No.
She was taken to a hospital there in Paris, and she died at the age of 68 on April 12th, 1975. But
I don't think you could do nothing about no cerebral hemorrhage.
Not if it was not caught early enough. I don't know, you know.
Right.
So places that are set up in her honor. You can go to Place Josephine Baker in Monte Parnasse. I don't know that part. But it was in the quarter of Paris that's named in her honor. She's been inducted into the St. Louis Walk of Fame. In 1995, she was inducted into the Hall of Famous Missourians. St. Louis's Channing Avenue is renamed Josephine Baker Boulevard, and there's a wax sculpture of her that is on permanent display at the Griot Museum of Black History.
Oh, I love that. I love the ending like that. That was cute. Oh my God.
Yay, happy birthday. Yay. Okay.
So, you guys know what time it is? It's the plug. I almost said the history of the Lord.
It's the plug.
The plug.
So the plug for this season, of course, is take care of yourself, take care of others. We are, what you want to plug this time?
Oh, the same thing. Examine your misogyny and misogynoir. There's this tweet going around and it's like, the world would be a better place if women was in charge. And people are like,
do you forget
your white feminism?
Come the fuck on.
There are books. She owned slaves or they owned slaves. And it's about women and how they owned slaves and
complicit and compliant, but like absolutely spearheading some of the movements that go against their own interests. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Like, and then Martina, I can't remember her last name, but she used to criticize the fuck out of Serena and Venus Williams. And she was talking about, oh, y'all need to welcome Kate and Clark. And somebody was like, how you welcome Venus and Serena Williams?
It's not a man woman thing, because thinking in the binary is dated. Like, that's
It's honestly a racist thing. It's a misogynoir thing.
Yeah, honestly,
it's the intersection that you are not only a woman, but you are a Black woman. So, that's like part of the problem, because like Black women and Black men, we share the same race, and then Black women and white women, we share the same gender or sex, and then it's that intersection that they both never get to experience, so they don't know how to like come together when there's issues that's concerning us specifically. So,
and I don't know. I think that it needs to be more of a I don't know.
Need to get y'all head out y'all ass and just consider that you're not the only one. Who was it? Yoko Ono was like, women are the N-words of the world. Like, Black women
wild
don't exist.
Wild times.
So what does that mean?
Check yourself, because I'm not even going to tell those stories on this.
Not on this.
Check yourself. Make sure you're taking care of yourself, taking care of others, and making sure that you're checking in real ways. You know what I mean? Yes. If that means sitting with yourself and coming to resolution about some of the things that you see in other people that you don't like, that you also are mirroring, maybe it's time to let that shit go. So we can do better by each other. So, yes, that's it. Let's get into the episode. A Wrinkle in Time is the movie.
The synopsis of size.
Wait. What do your lenses look like?
Oh, sorry. I have some technical problems on this end. Very thin, round lens that's stacked on each other going downwards mid-cheek. And they move as one, with the bottom one being an areola and a nipple, and the nose bridge is the Sankofa symbol, because we got Siggy Taddy supremacy over here.
Yes. What do your lenses look like? My lenses are a single copper wire legs for both ends and for the frames. The left one is a half circle like a bowl, and the copper goes around it with a middle nodule in the middle of the left. It's a half. The right one is a full one. These are both brown tinted lenses. And that is, they have penises hanging by the balls on the legs. And that is for all titties out there. The full titties, mastectomy ones, chosen, whatever. Chesticles. Yes. Breastises. Okay. Oh. My squirrel is back. Let me let him see me. Okay. All right. So let's get into the movie. What's the synopsis of A Wrinkle in Time?
After the disappearance of her scientist father, three peculiar beings send Meg, her brother, and her friends to space in order to find him.
All right. Accurate.
That's accurate.
Yeah. Accurate.
We always say that afterwards.
Because, you know, I don't even... Because sometimes it's not, and we've definitely seen where it's been like, dog, that's not enough of a description. This was exactly that. What was your ranking?
No, I went to categories first. Because you're not going to like my ranking.
How you know? You don't even know how I feel. Okay, so my categories was all cute. Fuck me, right? Eyebrow raise. Now what the fuck? Looks around. Hello? I have LOL. And then I have beautiful gowns, but not in a derogatory way. Like, actually...
Beautiful gown.
Yeah. That's what are your categories?
Brother, all the adults are failing her. Racism is so insidious. Visuals. I like it like that. Mm-hmm. And then I have LOL.
Okay, because we stay laughing. All right, so now tell me your damn ranking.
It's a 3.
Baby, I'm not mad at you. I gave this a 5.5.
Okay, now, and see, I'm coming from the perspective of somebody who knows the book.
And I do not.
That's the thing, and that's why it got that ranking. So
give it to me. You know I love a book version. This is going to be interesting.
So my very first thing is, why is it a mixed family dynamic?
Because is it a Black family in the book?
No, it's a white family in the book. Okay. But... I didn't understand what was the point of it being a mixed family dynamic without exploring like her race and whatnot, because the whole, it's a lot that bothered me on this fucking book.
No. So, keep going.
So Meg wasn't the one being bullied. Her brother was. Charles Wallace was being bullied. Charles Wallace also didn't go to school because Charles Wallace was 5 in the book. He didn't start talking until he was 4. And then he was not going to talk because, you know, everybody already thought he was slow. And he was like, oh, I don't want you to know that I'm smart, because then I'll get picked on for that, too. So she got in trouble for beating a boy's ass. And then her mom was like, oh, they told me you should apologize, but I don't think you got shit to apologize for. So that pissed me off when her mom was like, oh, you should apologize for
what? I definitely said apologize for fucking what?
For what? And then not only that, her mom was a scientist. Okay, her mom was a scientist, brilliant. But it wasn't conveyed as enough. Like, she would be doing experiments while cooking. And then first off, she also had 2 twin brothers. So it was her 2 twin brothers, Charles Wallace.
We missed that as siblings?
So, mind you, they wasn't as special as Charles Wallace and Meg.
So that's why they didn't.
They were more like bronze. Because, like, Charles Wallace and Meg was, like, tested from a young age. And they was like, you guys are special. You guys are really smart. And the thing about Meg's character, she was stubborn, she was headstrong, she was hot-tempered, but she was also a 13 insecure little girl, because her mom was like this beautiful, brilliant person, and she felt like she was so ugly because she had braces, she had glasses. She was like, I can never measure up to you, but like she loved and resented her mom at the same time. And I felt like that.
So dad wasn't a scientist in the book?
Dad was a scientist in the book. Dad worked for the government, okay? Worked for the government. Dad had been away working for the government. He had been sending letters. It had been a year since he had sent a letter. And they was like, ooh, he done ran off with somebody. Dad was supposed to go to Mars, okay? That was the plan. Okay. Like, they sent somebody, and he was the second in line. And he was supposed to go to Mars. He didn't know how to test her. It wasn't familiar to him and things like that. Mrs. Who, Mrs. What's It, Mrs. Which? Were all older people. They were all older women. Okay. The relationship in the movie of Mrs. Watson and Meg pissed me the fuck off, because Mrs. Watson was a motherly.
Mrs. Watson was an asshole in here. She was okay. Wait. Before you go too far on that. Okay, so certain things I absolutely was questioning about. So the book is written by Madeline L'Engle. I again have not read the book, so that's why the 5.5 for me was very much, because I didn't know what was missing. But I understand now why people went there and said that they didn't like it. Why it
didn't. It wasn't true to the book, and it's certain parts, and I'm just like, why did you do it this way? Because
what was the directorial choice?
Why was Miss Watson so critical of her? Because in the book she wasn't. Because Miss Watson was the pivotal point. They gave all 3 of the kids gifts, and when Meg had to go back, she said, "Oh, you have to figure out what this gift is." And she figured it out because she was like, "Oh, it's love, because Miss Watson loves me." That's why. Mm.
And so that dialogue back of who loves her, when she gave it to Charles Wallace, that was a monologue that she had given to herself and was loving.
No, it was like Charles Wallace was like, "Oh, everybody hates you." Da, 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 da. And she was like, "No, you're wrong. Miss Watson loves me."
Yeah, and in the movie, she was like, "You love me. You love me, Charles Wallace. You love me."
That was
so that's not accurate.
Was bothering. Because she was like, "Oh, I'll love you even if you don't love me." And that's like, that's a little bit of a abuse sentiment.
So let me ask you, does dad have any consequence in the book?
Dad didn't abandon them, one. And I don't know why they took that stance of like, oh, he abandoned them. He was imprisoned in Kamazot. Like,
No. I got that part. My thing was that when he is in Kasserat and Charles Wallace has been taken over by the It. When he's like, oh, Meg, you gave me the light to be able to test her back. Maybe I can do it. He tries it even though Charles Wallace has been taken over. He was willing to abandon that child for a second time, and he didn't think a thing about it until Meg told him something. So I'm wondering if in the book there was any consequence, or if that is something that was a dramatization for Hollywood.
So in the book, they actually test her out of there, him, Calvin, and Meg, and they go to the nearest planet. And that's where they meet Aunt Beast, and Aunt Beast heals her because like Meg almost died because she touched So, and see, this is why it bothers me because, okay, they played on some of them. Racism is so insidious. They have like a lot of darkness, a lot of light terminology. But there was literally something in the book called the black thing. And it was like this black cloud. And like so even looking at it.
That's coming.
No, it's separate from it. That's the thing. It was like a black cloud. It had like its own chapter and everything. So they actually tested away. And honestly, in the book, Meg figures out that her parents are not this infallible, all-knowing, can't fix it kind of people. Like they recognize the humanness in her parents because she's like, she yelled at him at the other planet, like, how dare you leave Charles Wallace? How dare you not help us? How dare you do all of these things? And he's like, I'm so sorry, I'm only human.
That did happen in the movie, but what pissed me off is that when Meg was able to test her and stay to be able to fight for Charles Wallace and get him back, so that doesn't happen in the book. That pissed me off in the movie because this dramatization where now you have left Charles Wallace a second time, Meg is now there by herself because she's not going to leave her brother. And so she goes, and this isn't like some portal two out. Like, it just pissed me off because when she does come back successfully with Charles Wallace, and we see that Calvin is there with Dad, because that was also questioning me for a second, like, where did Calvin go? They just kind of, in the movie, we just assumed that he got back safely. I didn't. And until I saw him, I was worried.
Enough. Like, his character was actually pretty pivotal in the movie. Like, he was able to communicate with all different sorts of beasts and whatnot. And not only that, he was like the third out of 11. His family was, he came from like an abusive household. Like, you get more
of kind of got is. A little bit of that. They gave it a little bit when they gave his background and Dad was being like super type A and mad about the mom. And like, so I get like taking create, because the director of this is Ava DuVernay. And Ava DuVernay has a history. It's okay. But okay, so before she's in Scandalous, and we can definitely talk about it, which I would appreciate. She has so many accolades under her name. She was the first woman, the first Black woman to win the award for Sundance Film Festival for her second film feature film, which was called Middle of Nowhere. But since then, it seems like she has decided to delve into Black traumas in certain ways. And I get that they are biographicals and things that need to be told for history. I agree, and I even more appreciate that she's moving away from just slave things, but she's done some really excellent work. If you look at her work as far as like TV, where it's not a movie, Ava DuVernay kills. She knows how to bring books to life. Queen Sugar is a book. And I think
she did Queen Sugar.
She did Queen Sugar. Like, okay. So I didn't want to talk to.
I've only seen 13 and When They See Us. So that had like high expectations because I was like, oh, I know you know how to tackle race.
Yes.
I haven't seen Selma. I haven't seen I Will Follow, Middle Nowhere, Origin. I haven't seen those yet.
She directed an episode of Scandal. She did Queen Sugar.
Which episode? It's probably not there. Sorry.
Listen. Okay. It's called Vermont is for Lovers too.
I gotta look that up. But keep going.
She did When They See Us. She has something called The Red Line, Cherish the Day, where she was writer, executive producer, and creator, but was not the director. Colin in Black and White, she did an episode called Cornrows. She did Home Sweet Home, Naomi, and DMZ. So she has, like, outside of doing documentary or biographical work, she has an array of things. She likes to touch on things, but she likes to focus on Black work. So I get with her being able to have the support of Oprah to get the rights to the book to make the film, that she was able to take some creative...
They like this.
Yeah, she was able to take some creative adventure with it, but it pissed me off that this white man, I did not understand why this white man was able to be the head of the family and have no consequence for the fact that he did leave Charles Wallace that second time. Maybe not the first time, maybe the first time was just about educational aspirations and wanting to be able to achieve something that he and his wife, and we did see that somewhat, that the wife was just as fair in her genius as him, but she was also more logical in how she was doing it. But it pissed me off that she had to do that.
I don't like the way that both of these Black characters that you made Black, by the way, that was your decision, are supposedly like Meg is like so doubtful and so this, so that, but then and
is she that in the book?
She's a teenage girl, so she was like a little bit of a scaredy pants, but she had like gumption, like that's the thing, like, and she was hot tempered and things like that.
And Meg is played by Storm Reid, and this isn't the introduction for us to Storm Reid, but right, I there. Love Ooh. Little 20-year-old Storm Reid from Atlanta. I did not know that she was in 20 Years a Slave. I don't know where she is in that.
12 Years a Slave?
I'm sorry, yes. Yeah, 12 Years a Slave.
I still haven't seen that movie because I don't do well with Black trauma.
I went to go see that in the theater because I did not want it to flop. There was something about the movie that I wanted, and seeing Lupita Nyong'o in it,
she did an amazing job, baby. But the way I cannot sit through that.
It was also a version of Slave Story I have not seen When They See Us.
That was a lot. And I just imagine 12 Years a Slave would be, I think that's worse than When They See Us, honestly.
I don't know. We may have to challenge each other to watch. I was going to say, but I think it's awesome because I hadn't seen this in full until watching it for this episode. And but I do know her from Euphoria. And so Euphoria, traumatic for me. I've only watched maybe 6 episodes of season 1 because it makes my heart rate raise. It gives me anxiety. They are acting Euphoria. The fuck. Listen, okay? But she's also playing Riley Abel in The Last of Us because she was the live-action film adaptation for the video game. So, like, she's doing her thing. Derek McCobb, who plays Charles Wallace, not much on him. He's working, but there wasn't much.
American actor. I had to translate the Wikipedia page. He did...
could not find it.
22 Boss, Stephanie, The Chaos Brief, A Wrinkle in Time, Hold On. He's been acting since 2016.
That's all that I saw.
10 in that movie, which you try to play off as 6, like,
he was itty bitty, but you know what? He's an itty bitty kid, and he played it well. I think that it was better because even with it being a lot of CGI and stuff, I don't know if a child that young needs to be exposed to that type of. Because they were inside of it, it was terrifying.
But if you're gonna raise the age, you could have raised them to 7. I would have believed that.
Hilarious. and then we had Levi Miller, who plays Calvin, who's an Australian actor. Yes. I was like, boy, my boy is working. Listen on the ballot. He's working and he does his American accents right, and I just fumbled the Australian one. So
interestingly enough, he at 5 or 6 he entered and won a drama competition with a Peter Pan monologue, and then he played Peter Pan in Pan in 2015.
My man is working. He is working. My thing about this was, and I don't know if Ava DuVernay as director or any of the directors get to have a part in casting, or if they just say this is the idea of who I want cast for this, but there was one, and this is gonna sound so fucked up, but there was a point when they were in the tree and they were hugging because they had to get over the wall or whatever, and when they were hugging, if there was no heads and it was just arms laying next to each other, you would not have been able to tell their arms from each other. They were about the same complexion, and when I saw that he was Australian, I was like, ah, he's one of them permanently ripe white folks.
So done.
He's permanently tanned. I got you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just was like, I wonder. And then I wondered, because I had not read the book, was that the criticism that it received was so wide. Now, this was made with a budget of $103 million. It was the first live action film directed by an African American woman to get that money. In budget, right?
Yeah.
Revenue, at first they didn't pull too much, and then on streaming now they're able to give it a little bit more. They said it made $133.2 million, but they called that a flop. And I want to know, in your opinion, is that because the people who had waited so long to have seen the book become live action were disappointed with what they saw on screen?
So my thing about there are certain parts I didn't like. Like I already mentioned the relationship between Mrs. Watson and Meg, but the whole Camazot and how they tried to play it as like a light darkness kind of thing. It In a sense, yes, it was. But the reason why Kamazat was so dark is because they tried to force conformity and uniformity on everybody. And I really wish you would have examined that as the reason why it was so dark and not just like this light, dark dichotomy. Because mm-hmm. the tree scene with the tornado and then the beach scene were not in there. And it doesn't make sense because it was about conformity. Even mm-hmm. in the scene with the houses, in the book, there was a boy who was doing it wrong. And he eventually like gets snatched up. But then later
was that
in the book,
Stepford House ass neighborhood was freaky as shit from the time that it was only just the kids. And when Charles Wallace was like, I don't like the rhythm, it hurts. I was like, yes, baby, because when I tell you I could feel that inside of my bones too, and something in me was like, they need to run. Like it was it gave something, but I was confused about why that was part of it. And it's because you're not going to get everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's going to be things that are missing, but as a point.
Made it because the beach scene and the chaoticness, that doesn't scream conformity. Like there are ways you could have been like, oh, this is Kamazat was about conformity. And like even that little boy, he got punished later on where he had to bounce the ball right. And every time it hit the ground, he would scream like he was in pain. Because in Kamazat, there is no sickness. They kill people who are sick. There is a sameness to it. Like, and there's the whole lesson is like, you don't want this kind of conformity. Because mind you, this was written
in Cold War
era. Yeah.
So this was published in 1962. I don't know when it was written, but I'm wondering if part of that was about them saying kind of like this also was written as a young adult and because this was marketed to even younger, like this was children were taking this. This was scary for them. It's almost like we talked about with The Wiz, where Black people of it took it a little deeper, a little farther than maybe other people were prepared to deal with when it comes to a younger child going to see that and like the bad dreams that they may have. Because this, for me, as a person at my big age, I was like, the babies were going to go see this? The gowns were beautiful. The fadeaways, the cinematography was real nice. Shout out to the guy who did that. Gorgeous. It was gorgeous, but I was like, the babies are going to see this?
And I just think it would have been a more impactful message because the whole thing was like, oh, Kamazat wants to kill your creativity. You can and wants to kill and wants to focus on like individualism and you cannot be.
And they said that it wanted to kill their light. Okay, so that's okay. Because
like,
I was.
You don't get the same like in the movie that you do in the book, and it's bothering.
And they needed to, and that was probably a directorial decision because they thought. I think that around the round table, the conversation was probably, do we keep this as something that we market to young adult, which young adult could be anywhere from like right now, let's say it's 11 to like 20, right? Mm-hmm. Did they think? So IMDb gave this a 4.3 out of 10.
No, I meant like the was it PG or?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Let's see, because I was pulling up a
ring. It was PG.
A book. It's PG? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and with parent guidance, that means because if it's PG-13,
that means
different range.
Right.
And that means that you get to use certain words as well. There's an expectation. So right. Around the round table, it was probably a conversation of, do we want to have this be a PG-13 movie, which the people who actually read the book and who would want to go see it are probably going to appreciate being a PG-13. It doesn't need to be rated R, but there needs to be a little bit of, not necessarily darkness, but a little bit of social weight, because that's what was given in the book. Right. And they made a decision not to go there and to take it into PG, which meant that they had to take out some of the weighty topics that are discussed in the book to make it digestible for the audience that they were actually targeting. And I think they missed.
And I wonder if it's also because it was Disney. So I'm wondering also if it was a Disney thing, too, because not only did that happen, but two other things that bothered me was the Mrs. What's It turns into that lettuce thing. I don't know what the fuck.
I thought that was kind of cool. It was a waste of money. If that doesn't happen in the book, it's a waste of money.
In the book, she turns into a winged centaur. And it also expresses the part like she's genderless. Like,
shit. So they made her a goddamn cabbage patch fucking baby, but not the baby? Extra leafy cabbage patch mermaid in the sky?
So that pissed me off because I was like, you could have explored gender and how it was like, And then,
well, I guess that, well, okay, so on that, I guess being leaf,
Disney.
Yeah, but being of a plant, maybe people don't necessarily think of plants as having, and that would be incorrect, but like, you know what I mean? Maybe it being a head of lettuce, it was just like, this person is head, like, you know, is mind and cerebral and thought and, you know, that, and we're not thinking of the body, and that's why she wasn't thinking of the body, which is why she stripped and was like, Calvin was like, they don't do that. And she was like, dude, it's a body, and I'm not even finished. Right. So maybe that and was the nod.
I would like to say in a sense, but it was just, I feel like it was limited, because even with the, I didn't like the scene with the happy medium. One, the happy medium was a woman, so why are you pushing heteronormativity?
Okay, because Jack
Galifianakis.
There you go. I'm sorry. We're the three best friends that anyone can have.
I'm calling him that from now on. And also, it was a cave, like it was, but it wasn't. I like the golden touches. That was beautiful.
It wasn't
appropriating yoga. He looked into a crystal ball. She looked into a crystal ball in order to discern the future and to like see different planes.
Wow.
So I don't know why they wanted to appropriate yoga in that way.
I understood. They were like, Meg has the worst sense of balance because every time that she tests her, she had the worst experience. And it wasn't until her last tester that she had a nice one and she had found what she needed to find her own balance. So
testing wasn't painful until her dad did it in the book.
Oh, I needed that.
Strange and it was unfamiliar, but I don't recall it being painful until her dad did it. And that's only because they pushed a black thing and she was about to die. So
I'm not even going to talk about Chris Pine because I am frustrated with him being a face. I feel like a lot of the budget went towards them needing faces. Chris Pine is the dad.
Oh my God, he was. The way I don't know these faces.
Listen, he's handsome. We'll give it to that. But I didn't even put him in here because you were probably a part of the $103 million that was not the cinematography, because there was a lot of work that was done visually in putting this together. But I don't know. I guess I'm disappointed in the fact that it was just like, for me, it was just like the need to make this a interracial family was unnecessary if the family was just a white family or like whatever. I appreciate that they were trying to make it more modern, but even biracials weren't allowed until like after 72. Calm down.
I just feel like it's a missed opportunity because you could have explored her race when going to Camazotz, where they forced conformity and uniformity, and you could
and she
like,
would
oh,
be
well,
different,
I'm,
and she's
I'm
so
different,
different you know what I mean?
And I'm not part of the same, and it's just.
And I wonder what was on the cutting board floor. Like, what was there and was not included that they were like, damn, I wish. Because bloopers really do make up for some of the thing. Or not bloopers, but, like, just the cutouts. If you have 2 hours of cut parts that are like, this would have gone here, I don't give a damn. It sometimes would make the movie, but that's not what happens in theater. That's not what happens in streaming. You used to typically have to have the physical copy of something to have that experience. And that has changed a lot of movies. And for like the ranking that I would have given it had we been doing this podcast back then, because not Stomp the Yard. What the fuck is that goddamn movie with Omarion and Marcus Houston?
It's a dance movie.
Uh-huh.
Step Up.
You Got Served.
There you go. I was like, is either Step Up, Stomp the Yard, or
You Got Served. Okay, so the first time I saw You Got Served, I don't know if I took my sister to go watch it or if I went to go see it with friends, and I was like, I am not interested. I probably laughed more than appropriate in that movie, but the dancing, cool, like whatever. It was very West Coast dancey, and I was like, we could go outside and see this. Very jaded and like, I'm over this, but I'm glad that I got to go see it in theater.
Why did I pay for this?
This is definitely a time that, like, especially in the Bay, you could go outside and see people dancing on the street and it'd be the best thing you had ever seen in your life. I did not feel like we need to go to the movies. But one of my roommates, rather, she loved the fuck out of that movie, and she had it on DVD. And when I tell you, she was like, have you ever watched this movie with the actor commentary playing? Because they have that as an option. And I was like, I'm sorry, I have not. You Got Served is actually one of my favorite movies now because of Omarion and Marcus Houston commenting on things that I did not catch, did not know, did not. He was like, bro, you remember that day? Just talking about their experience on set and filming this movie. So maybe this is a missed opportunity for A Wrinkle in Time. And maybe there's a lot on the cutting room floor that would have been included that would have given context to people who read the book and were looking for specific things to be there, because there were a lot of people who were looking for very specific things to be right. in the movie. And I remember
some of it was good. So I mean, because Mrs. Witch isn't present, but I do like that they showed Mrs. Witch. So that was nice in the book.
Okay. Okay.
And I will say two more things. We've talked about it. Stop touching other folks' kids. I know you act with these kids, but like, why did you kiss her and she have to kiss you? Like, I don't. That's
and
not
also,
your child.
It's not. And also, the lack of parenting. And I know that was one of your things. At first, I was like, Charles Wallace be unsupervised. Then I realized these babies be unsupervised.
Charles okay. Wallace was more prideful in the, and they warned him. Two of their gifts to him was like, you need to watch your pride because you're gonna get fucked up.
Okay.
And one thing,
because they did treat him like little fucking perfect.
And he was not. And that's the thing. Like, he did not know everything in the book. They were all unaware of what's going on. They were all clueless. So why did he get to be the one that, like, knew everything? Like, yeah, he knew Mrs. Watson and whatnot. But, like, he was also trepidatious. He was also unsure of himself. So, and then Minnie Kaelin, maybe it's because I watch with the captions on. She messed up her lines. And the way that threw me off.
No. So I wonder if, because I've heard for captioning that sometimes they get the captioning that's from the script, and sometimes when they're recording, director will choose to have somebody do something different and go a little bit off script, but the script has already been given to the captioning company.
This was a quotable. It was one of the quotes, like you can literally type it into, and it was, she said, love without love. It was life without love. And I had to look it up and I was like, what's the quote? She said the quote wrong. And I was like, that's bothering. And how did nobody in this production catch it? Like, and I didn't even mind, because like in the book.
You know what it was? Somebody caught it, but money to film that again.
That's what it was.
Because they were dressed up and doing all that CGI shit at that time. You know what I'm saying? That's a scene where it costs too much to take it back now. And that's kind of,
That's lazy, honestly.
It is. That's but so we're, lazy. This is a post-production catch.
That too.
It would take a whole lot of money to go back and film that one scene, even if they just go in and have her do hair and head makeup only and shoot her from the head up and superimpose it. It's a lot of money. Does Disney have it? Yes. Are there lazy bastards at Disney who probably did not want to? Absolutely. But that's a post-production catch. And the fact that you caught it, I wonder how many other people did.
It bothered me. And I tried not to, because I was like, oh, okay. She still speaks in quotes. She was multilingual in the book. Like, she would do it in French, Latin, Spanish, all of that.
This is upsetting. Okay. So, what is your ticks for your categories?
Brother, had 27. And that was mainly stuff that was not in the book that I was like, why did you do this as, why was this? And I have to point out too, that this was written by, it was a white woman and a white man, and Ava DuVernay directed it. Okay. Yes. So it was like a written script by these two white people and Ava DuVernay.
No, it's a written book by the white people. Ava DuVernay bought the rights to the book. There's probably somebody who takes the book and makes it into a screenplay. And then from there, they have a director. Yes.
Okay. So I guess they wrote this version of the screenplay. Because it was not, it said based on the book, the actual book, but those were not her names. Those were like modern screenwriters.
Yeah, so that, and some of that, because again, this was published in 1976. So, I mean, right. I'm sorry, 1962. So we do not know what the language, I don't know what the language was like, if they really was tapping into stuff, but they, to make it a little bit more updated, to make it more palatable for the people who are of 2018 and would be watching it, there's absolutely going to be changes.
Yeah. I just wish. All the adults are failing her had 7. Racism is so insidious had 20. because I did not understand. Y'all kept saying light and dark and light and dark, and it's just visuals have 7. I like it like that, have 15, and LOL have 15. And I want to say that when Calvin pointed out her hair, in the book, it was her eyes, and she didn't like negate him or anything. So I don't understand the negation, because it's like, especially for a little black girl, that you decided to test this as a little, why did you negate him and be like, oh, I don't think it's, when in the book she just blushed and was like, ooh. So,
but you know what? There was also a directorial decision to make it a compliment on this black, you know, this biracial child's, I don't know if it's Stormy is biracial, but on this black child's hair.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going by
character is biracial. Yeah. So on this biracial character's hair, it was a choice to compliment her on her hair and not something that, you know.
And so, last thing, because that bothered me, the perfect version of her was not in the book. So the fact that you made her this non-disabled, because she wears glasses are a disability,
straight hair.
I was like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. So that was a choice.
Yes, it was.
So.
Okay. So. You're so funny. Cahute had 10. Oh, Fuck Me Right had 11. Eyebrow Raise has 9. Now, What the Fuck also has 11. And they were separate. Okay. Looks Around Hello had 13. LOL had 7, and Beautiful Gowns had 11.
Is when I say their visuals, when I, this was, because I don't want to be like, oh, so negative, it didn't follow the book. Visually, this was
wonderful.
I really liked the visuals. It was gorgeous.
I really appreciated the visuals, and I have no problem admitting that part of what appealed me to it is what I was seeing on the screen visually. The makeup was wonderful. The hair was wonderful. The gowns were wonderful.
Oh my God.
The way that it looked was great. The final tesser for Meg was one of my favorite parts of the movie. It just pissed me off that she went in and hugged this white man first and like reconciled with him having no goddamn consequence. I also think that that was a directorial decision, because he could have, like, even the fact that he came in the house and got them smooth kisses from mom, I was like, no, number one, there are 3 children in the room. All of that lip locking, little inappropriate. The other part of it for me was that there was no, like, she touched him, like, yeah, like, sit with him and then be like, you know, because you chose for this to be a black mother, and there was no there was no blackness from her.
Put her in there just so you could have Storm Reed as the female.
And movie. I wonder if that is a casting direction or if it's that directorial decision, and how much one has on the other influence. Because
I don't think it was a good representation. I feel like you just stuck the, you can replace Storm Reed with anybody else, and the mother with anybody else, and I would not have noticed on why you had to make them black specifically.
Didn't, but I appreciated that Storm Reed was in this, because the crying, I even appreciated that when it came down to the crying scene, she cried better than Chris Pine. That shit
pissed The child actors in this blew the adults out the water, and that is part of the reason why I gave it 3 points. That, the visuals, and
so that makes our combined ranking a 4.25 out of 10. IMDb gave this a 4.3 out of 10, and Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 43%. So this is the first time, I think, for us that we are so fucking on point. That shit is crazy to me. I don't know if we've ever hit it so close to on the head. But I do think, and it's not no shade to it, I think it was a wonderful movie, only because I don't know the book, and I do think that part of the reason it failed is because anybody who went to go see it first night, first week, or first weekend sales, there's social media now. When I tell you, I remember actively that somebody went to go see this movie at Friday at like 8 o'clock or midnight, whatever dropped. And when I tell you, by the time they came back, or like, I don't know if they live tweeted through the movie or if they had snapped shots from the screen, but by the next morning when I woke up and saw that, and I was like, damn, you didn't even let the movie come out. And he was like, it's based off a book. And I said, has the book ever been made into a live action movie? Because people they were hyped to go see it. There was a true true expectation and anticipation for this movie. And yeah. I think that in the first weekend, they disappointed and broke so many people's heart that it really had long-term effects.
Just the wasted potential is the thing that broke my heart, because you could have done so much more with this that I feel like, and still been true to the source material, but changed it enough where it suited you as a director who is not afraid to tackle race. Like,
he's not, and she does
so
it
disappointed.
Well.
I'm so
disappointed. I mean, but it was a decent movie. Would I allow and sit with my niece to watch it? Absolutely, because it's pretty. And until it's she's pretty. Old enough to watch it herself or to read the book herself and be like, sissy, what the fuck is this? For me to be like, babe, welcome to the world in 2018. Like, right. You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, that's A Wrinkle in Time, episode 81, y'all. So should we, we're not saying what the next movie or the next directors are.
Yes, it. I like us not saying it, because it keeps y'all on your toes. And then if we change things, it keeps us on our toes.
That's it. Because when we announced and changed things up, we'd be like, ooh.
Damn, we shouldn't have said shit.
Shouldn't have. Also, I would like to just throw out there, if you are not Black and you are not willing and ready to throw hands, keep AAVE out your mouth. I like to call it Ebonics because I'm older, but let me let you know that people will swing on you. And I'm not just talking about the N-word. There are certain things that are ours. They are not yours. They are not meant to be shared, and it's no offense to you. And I don't think that you should be offended by somebody telling us that you don't use things.
What happened?
Baby, it's just little stuff. It be little stuff. We could talk about it. Go ahead and let go. Bye, y'all.
Y'all shouldn't do that, though. Bye.